Frederick Douglass Opie is a food historian who is fascinated with stories about food and traditions and how food shapes history. He's professor of history and foodways at Babson College and writes the blog Food as a Lens. Our producer Jennifer Russell sat down with Fred to talk about a connection many of us may not consider, that between Southern food and music.
Fred, welcome.
Oh, great to be here.
I'd love for you to talk a bit about Southern food's connection to the jazz and blues culture.
Well, the connection is an old one, and I first came across it as I was working on a book on the anthropologist Zora Neale Hurston. She did a lot of her field work during the era of the Great Depression in the Deep South among turpentine camp workers, sawmill camp workers, and also tropical citrus fruit planters and farmers, you know, people working on plantations. And one of the things that you find when you read her work is she talks about the importance of juke joints, that a lot of these workers on their payday, which was typically on a Saturday, is that they would spend time in the juke joints. And these were just kind of shacks where you saw blues music as well as, you know, what we call traditional soul food. You know, and most of these things were kind of eaten, you know, low on the hogs, pig's feet, chitlins, also chicken and some fish. But you would see these two things married together as a way of attracting customers into juke joints. And some of the most noted blues artists on the chitlin circuit, which was these small mom-and-pop venues that before the end of Jim Crow segregation, these were the places where these guys would perform. But if they couldn't get gigs on that, they could always find a juke joint back in the woods someplace where they could make some money and definitely get a full belly. And when we talk about the chitlin circuit, sometimes they were very small, hole-in-the-wall places, but Chitlin Circuit also included places like the Apollo Theater in Harlem. So some of these venues were very small, but in urban areas, they could be very large. And it's true that you see that the term soul is so much related to the Chitlin Circuit, and people who made the best they could out of the opportunities they had, whether it be spaces to play their music, places to eat food, or places to perform when nobody else would have them. So it's this whole ideal of surviving with dignity in the midst of very precarious situations.
I really love the spirit of that. Fred, who are the artists that you associate strongly with a food and music connection, the ones who really got their starts in these juke joints that we're talking about?
I think the matriarch among the blues artists would have to be Betsy Smith. She was just a tough woman who not only could belt out the blues, but she could belt you out if you got out of line with her. So she's one of the people that I would definitely go to first.
Let's listen to Bessie.
Sure.
Give me a big foot and a bottle of beer. Send me Kate. I don't care. I feel just like I want a clown. Give the beer to play a drink because he's bringing me down, he's got a rhythm, yeah.
Oh, I love her.
You know, when I was listening to that song, I just got this chill going down my back. Because I could just see this woman in a juke joint or on the stage of the Apollo just letting it rip. She was a big woman. She could belt it out. But also, when these people first learned how to perform, they did it in juke joints where there was no sound system. And you had people making all kind of ruckus. So, you know, the idea of being able to just let it go and get your song out above the crowd was just one of those things that comes to my mind as I listen to that song. And then after that, I like Fats Waller. I mean, so Betsy Smith, she hails from Tennessee. Fats Waller grew up in Harlem, and most of his career was right there in Harlem. And, you know, people sometimes talk about, rap music today and the music being, you know, talking about all kinds of crazy things that are X-rated. Fats Waller was doing that long before people were talking about rap music. And a lot of his lyrics are around food. I like one of his songs, All That Meat and No Potatoes.
Let's hear that.
All that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes. Yeah, I'm waiting, palpitating, with all that meat and no potatoes. All that meat, no potatoes. All that food to the alligators, yeah. Hold me steady, I am ready. With all that meat and no potatoes, I don't think
you can just imagine and read between the line of what he's talking about. So this is his escapade with a woman. It's a 1941 song. Fats Waller was a guy who was known for just being an absolute comic genius. great piano player and a guy who loved food. Fats was at one time something like 300 pounds. And he was known that when he played, he'd have a jug of whiskey that would sit right by him, but like a gallon, like one of those plastic gallon-sized milk containers, but full of whiskey. And he'd be playing all night, and then after he'd play all night, there's a story when he was in Chicago that the gangsters grabbed him, and he went out to Al Capone's place, and when he showed up, they just had nothing but fried chicken and biscuits ready for him and his signature gallon of whiskey.
What a story. Tell me a little bit more about the food connection in these venues.
You know, one of the things that I found out in the state of New York, you couldn't get a liquor license unless you had a way to sell food. You had to have some kind of food and a menu. And I don't know if that was the case in most states, but I suspect it was. So, you know, food and music were always linked together because of that, and also the type of food that's typically sold. It's typically salty type of dishes. So you're talking about pig's feet or trotters, as people call them, chitlin. A lot of these things are very salty, collard greens. And when you're consuming that, the one thing you want to do is you want to then purchase liquor. So it's a way for the club owner to make money. And then what's the music do? The music keeps people in the club so that they're buying more liquor and they're buying more food and then generating more income for that owner.
So, Fred, can you give me a couple examples? And are there any places that still exist?
The two that come to my mind are the Red Rooster in Harlem and Tilly's in Harlem. Red Rooster was one of these places that opened up right around an area that's called Jazz Alley in Harlem. And this is one of those places that would attract both African-Americans, but upperly mobile whites that would come uptown 1920s, 30s, and 40s. So that was a place that you went to hear the music at a club, and then afterwards, sometimes 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, you got hungry, and then you would go to the Red Rooster. Now, gentrification has hit Harlem since Bill Clinton opened his office there. So now Marcus Samuelson, the noted chef, has actually done a facelift and bought the property rights to the Red Rooster, and that's the name of his new restaurant, a great place if you're ever up in Harlem. Then there's Tilly's Chicken Shack. Tilly is a woman who, like many who ended up in Harlem, Harlem is what I would call a Caribbean and Southern diaspora, where people from the South, like her, she grew up in Tampa and at age 16, left on her own, went to Philadelphia first, and then ended up in Harlem. And she started selling chicken really as a kind of a cart. You know, she had a cart set up in front of a speakeasy during the Prohibition. And she saved up enough from the sale of biscuits and chicken to then buy a brick-and-mortar space. It became known as Tilly's Chicken Shack. And you see in a lot of artwork, it's no longer in existence, but it certainly had its heyday and was well-known among both the performers of jazz and jazz aficionados.
Fred, what a fascinating connection. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Fred Opie is the author of Hog and Hominy, Soul Food from Africa to America. Jennifer Russell is our producer. Now you can find Fred's playlist on the website, as well as Southern Chef Bill Smith's recipe for collards. And you know where it is, splendidtable.org.